At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Have you ever felt like you're just stuck on a loop? You know, living out the same day, same thoughts, same feelings, like year after year.
Mm-hmm.
Like you're playing a character in your own life, but maybe one you didn't quite sign up for.
Oh, absolutely. That sense of being on autopilot.
Yeah.
It's a profoundly human experience, really.
Yeah.
Makes real change feel almost impossible sometimes.
And that is exactly what we want to unpack today. We're taking a deep dive into some, pretty profound concepts from the book, Breaking the Habit of Being Yourself, How to Lose Your Mind and Create a New One.
It's a fascinating source.
It really is. Our mission here is to explore how your brain, your thoughts, your feelings, how they're constantly shaping your reality, and more importantly, how you can consciously reclaim that power.
Right.
We're going to explore the science behind personal transformation, you know, from the brain stuff to even quantum physics.
Right.
And reveal some practical steps to literally unwire that old self and build a new one.
And what's great about these sources, I think, is they don't just give you the what. They offer a really clear, actionable how-to. It's about actually applying these ideas.
Not just understanding them. Okay, so where do we start? The book makes it clear. It all begins with our brain.
Right.
It's involved in literally everything.
Everything. How you think, feel, act, interact. It's the organ of your personality, your character, intelligence, every single decision.
Yeah.
And the core idea is, pretty straightforward, actually. When your brain works right, you work right. You're happier, healthier, more successful.
Makes sense.
But conversely, a troubled brain, maybe from injury, trauma, or even just persistent negative thinking, it makes trouble more likely in your life. Our internal state really does shape our external world.
And it's not just a metaphor, is it?
Yeah.
The author talks about his own brain envy moment. That sounds intriguing. What happened there?
Right. So he's 37, thinks he's living pretty healthy. But then he sees his own brain scan, a SPECT scan, and he described it as looking toxic, bumpy.
Wow. Despite being healthy.
That's what he thought. But it wasn't one big thing. It was the buildup, you know?
Yeah.
Past bad habits, fast food, diet soda, not enough sleep, chronic stress, old hurts he hadn't dealt with, carrying extra weight.
Huh. Little things adding up.
Exactly. It showed how those seemingly small daily choices physically change our brain over time.
That really drives home how much our habits matter. And it creates this cycle, doesn't it? The book calls it the thinking and feeling loop.
Yes, the thinking and feeling loop. Every single thought you have triggers a biochemical reaction instantly.
Chemicals? Like what?
Well, the brain releases chemical signals to the body, and the body listens, sends a message back to the brain confirming that feeling.
Okay. So if I think about that annoying meeting I had.
Yep. You start thinking angry thoughts, your brain releases maybe some adrenaline, cortisol.
Yeah.
Your body literally gets ready for a fight, chemically speaking.
And then my body feels tense, which tells my brain, yep, still angry.
Precisely. It's this continuous thinking and feeling, feeling and thinking cycle. And that loop is your state of being.
It's a feedback system then. And it seems like eventually the subconscious just takes over. That's the habit of being yourself.
That's the core idea.
Yeah.
By your mid-30s, the book suggests something like 95% of who you are is operating as subconscious automatic programs.
95%?
Yeah. It's like your body has memorized these emotional states better than your conscious mind has. So the body effectively becomes the mind in many ways.
Can you give an example?
Sure. Think about driving a route you know really well. You ever get there and realize you don't remember half the drive?
All the time. Autopilot.
Exactly. Or like remembering a locker combination, sometimes your fingers just know it, even if you can't consciously recall the numbers right away. That's muscle memory, the body remembering.
Ah, I see.
And this is grounded in neuroscience. Hebb's Law. Nerve cells that fire together, wire together, repeat a thought, repeat an emotion, and you strengthen those neural pathways, like paving a road in your brain.
So the more you travel that road, the easier it is to go down it again automatically.
You got it. Which means we end up unconsciously running these old programs. Same thoughts, same actions, same feelings. Predictable.
And that hardwires the brain to just reflect, your current reality, your past, literally dictates your future.
Which leads right into the big challenge.
Yeah.
Actually changing. Because the body gets used to its usual chemical cocktail, even if it's negative stuff like guilt or anger.
It gets comfortable being uncomfortable.
Kinda, yeah. So when you consciously try to change, the body can sort of rebel. It throws up internal chatter, worst case scenarios.
Yeah.
Anything to keep you in that familiar chemical state.
Like an internal saboteur.
You could say that. It's this unconscious resistance that makes breaking free so incredibly difficult without, you know, a specific strategy.
Wow. Okay, so we're kind of battling our own biology here. But the book doesn't stop there, does it? It goes somewhere. Well, pretty mind-bending. Into the quantum realm.
It does indeed. Which is a huge shift. For a long time, you know, old school physics saw mind and matter as totally separate. Reality was fixed, predetermined. Humans didn't have much influence.
Yeah, that sounds a bit bleak, like we're just victims of circumstance.
Right. But then quantum physics came along and just blew that apart.
Yeah.
It showed that on the tiniest level, the subatomic level, things aren't just particles like little balls of matter. They're also waves, pure energy.
Both at the same time.
Both. And here's the kicker. Whether they appear as a particle or a wave seems to depend on the observer, on the mind watching.
Wait, seriously? So just by looking, we change things?
In essence, yes. It tells us mind and matter are fundamentally linked. Our subjective mind can create measurable changes in the objective world.
Okay. Mind. Officially. Blown.
It's a radical idea, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
It suggests our consciousness isn't just a byproduct of brain chemistry. It's an active player in shaping reality itself.
So the core idea then is our thoughts literally shape our destiny. Like the future version of me is somehow connected to me right now, outside of normal time and space.
That's the implication. And the book mentions some, well, pretty wild experiments, like one by Dr. Leonard Leibovici involving prayer for sepsis patients.
Yeah.
The prayers were directed at patients who had already recovered or died years before. And statistically, the group prayed for did better.
Whoa. Affecting the past.
It suggests our intentions, our thoughts, our feelings might ripple out across time past, present, and future. It's a lot to wrap your head around.
That really challenges everything we think we know about cause and effect. So it's not just positive thinking then, it's something deeper.
Much deeper. It points to this interconnected field of energy, of potential, that responds to our focused attention. Quantum law says all possibilities exist simultaneously in this field.
And this focused attention, there was a study mentioned, right? HeartMath study with DNA.
Yes, by Glenn Rain. Really fascinating stuff. He tested the effects of emotion and intention on DNA in test tubes.
What did he find?
Well, he found that just feeling positive emotions like love or appreciation didn't really change the DNA much on its own.
Okay.
And just having a clear intention, like thinking about winding or unwinding the DNA, that didn't do much either.
So neither worked alone.
Right. But, and this is the crucial part, when people combined a strong, elevated emotion, like deep love or gratitude, with a clear intention, then they saw significant changes. The DNA actually wound or unwound by up to 25%.
25% just from focused thought and feeling.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It shows the power isn't just in the wishing, the emotion, or just in the aiming, the thought. It's in the alignment.
Alignment, okay.
The quantum field responds when thoughts and feelings are working together, creating a coherent signal. It's about who you are being.
A coherent signal. I like that. So it's like tuning a radio. You need the right frequency and the right station.
That's a great analogy. And gratitude is presented as a really powerful way to generate that signal.
How so?
When you feel genuinely grateful before something good happens, you're essentially sending a signal into the field that the event has already occurred.
You're tricking your body.
You're convincing your body emotionally that the future you desire is happening now. Like if someone told you you'd want a trip to Hawaii next week, you'd start feeling happy now, right? Your body responds ahead of time.
Yeah, I definitely would. Okay, so we're sending these signals out into what exactly, this energy field. The book calls it a universal intelligence.
Mm-hmm. The idea is that physical reality is mostly interconnected energy, and there's this consciousness, this universal intelligence animating everything, including us. It's both personal within us and universal all around us.
And our job is to connect with it.
Willfully connect, yes.
Yeah.
By sending that clear, coherent signal, the aligned thought and feeling showing we expect change. It's about moving from being a passive observer to an active co-creator with this intelligence.
Wow. That flips the script from feeling like a victim to being empowered. Okay, but this brings up a really important point the book makes. The gap between how we seem on the outside and who we really are inside.
Ah, yes, the gap. And this ties into two fundamental modes of operating. survival versus creation.
Survival mode.
Yeah.
That sounds stressful.
It is. It's triggered by stress, real or even just imagined threats. Fight or flight kicks in. All your body's energy goes to dealing with a perceived danger, not to internal growth or repair.
And over time, that makes you sick.
It can, yeah. And emotionally, you're dominated by lower frequency feelings. Anger, fear, envy, hatred. The book says this makes us more matter, less energy. We get selfish, fixated on controlling the outside world, and feel cut off from that quantum field.
It's amazing how we can trigger that just with a thought. Unlike, say, a deer that gets scared, runs, and then just goes back to grazing.
Exactly. We humans can relive past stresses or worry about future ones just by thinking, keeping ourselves in that chronic state of imbalance.
So what's the alternative? Creation mode.
Right. Creation mode. This is when your frontal lobe, the thinking cap of your brain, is engaged. You can rise above your immediate environment, your body's urges, even linear time.
Sounds much better.
It is. It's linked to balance, growth, positive emotions like love and joy. In this state, we're selfless, connected. We become less matter, more energy. It's about expansion and possibility.
And this relates to the gap.
Yes. The gap is that space between the face. We show the world our appearance, our identity tied to jobs, people, possessions, and how we actually feel inside the hidden fears, insecurities, old pain.
The author had a moment with us himself, right?
He did. He realized his happiness depended on external things, like lecturing and travel. When those weren't happening, he felt empty, unsettled. He saw he was essentially addicted to his environment for his sense of self.
That sounds relatable. Relying on the outside to feel okay on the inside.
It's incredibly common. And often, people use other external things, shopping, drinking, gambling, food, scrolling online, to try and numb those uncomfortable inner feelings.
Addictions as avoidance.
Pretty much. But the relief is temporary, right? You need more and more to get the same effect. And that gap just gets wider. True happiness, the book argues, doesn't come from chasing external pleasure.
So you can't escape the internal stuff forever.
Eventually, no. Often around midlife, the sources suggest, things come to a head. A crisis hits and the soul kind of wakes up and demands you face the truth.
Oof, sounds rough.
It can be. But the point is, you can choose to change before that happens. You can change from a place of joy and inspiration, not just pain and suffering.
And when you do start closing that gap, letting go of those emotional dependencies,
you liberate a huge amount of energy. Energy that was tied up in holding on to those old patterns. Mm-hmm. That energy becomes available for creating something new. It brings joy, freedom, inspiration.
Like that story of Pamela, the one struggling with money issues.
Exactly. She was caught in feelings of lack and victimization about unpaid child support. Through meditation, she consciously worked on letting go of the anger and desperation.
Mm.
And then, seemingly out of nowhere, she got a $10,000 promotion and suddenly received $12,000 in back child support. Without her doing anything differently on the outside or even knowing how it would happen, shifting her inner state changed her outer reality.
That's incredible. Okay, so that's the why and the what. Now, the really practical part.
Right.
How do we actually do this? This brings us to the meditation process, right?
Yes, the meditation process is the practical blueprint. Its purpose is basically to get access to the subconscious mind's operating system so you can actively reprogram it.
So stop being the old thoughts and feelings and start observing them.
Precisely. Observe them and then consciously choose differently. And a key part of this is shifting your brain waves.
Brain waves, like beta, alpha.
Right. Normally when we're awake, analytical, maybe stressed, we're in high frequency beta waves. Meditation aims to slow those down.
To what?
To alpha, that relaxed, imaginative state, like daydreaming. It's the bridge to the subconscious. And then maybe even theta, that deeper trance-like state just before sleep, where the subconscious is really open to suggestion.
Do you become more programmable in a good way?
Exactly. The book also mentions gamma waves, which are associated with those really elevated states, bliss, compassion, but they're seen more as a positive side effect of the whole process.
Okay, so how does the meditation actually work? The book lays out steps, like week by week.
It does. It offers a structured approach. First things first, preparation. Super important. Find a quiet place, no distractions, and importantly, not your bed.
Why not the bed?
Your brain associates your bed with sleep. You want to be relaxed but alert for this. Minimize other senses. Do turn off phones. Maybe use an eye mask or earplugs. Comfy temperature.
Got it. And body posture.
Sit upright, spine straight but not stiff, limbs uncrossed, relaxed but awake. And mentally, you got to manage that analytical mind, the ego. gently guide it away from analyzing everything. And same with the body. If it fidgets, just gently bring it back to stillness. Retrain it.
Okay, prep done. Week one.
Week one is induction. This is about opening the door to that creative subconscious state. You use techniques to shift focus from thinking to sensing or feeling.
Like what?
Things like the body part induction, just becoming aware of the space different parts of your body occupy. Or the water rising induction, imagining warm water slowly rising up your body.
Ah, so it pulls you out of your head.
Exactly. It bypasses the analytical mind and moves you into alpha. Gateway opened.
Okay, week two.
Week two. Pruning away the habit of being yourself. This gets deeper. First, you recognize. Consciously identify one specific negative emotion or state you want to change. Anger, guilt, fear, whatever.
Just one.
Start with one. Ask yourself honestly. What kind of person have I been hiding? What are my limiting patterns? Maybe write them down.
Then what?
Then you admit and declare. You own up to these patterns, maybe inwardly speaking them to that higher power or universal intelligence. Not with fear or shame, but just honestly stating your truth to release the energy stuck there.
Feels vulnerable.
It is. And that leads to the final step for this week, surrender. You hand over these limitations and, crucially, your idea of how they should be fixed to that greater mind. You trust it to reorganize things in ways you might not expect.
Letting go of control.
Completely. With sincerity, humility, honesty, certainty. And the feeling that comes from that surrender is often relief, inspiration, joy, energy freed up.
Okay, making progress. Week three.
Week three. Dismantle the memory of the old you. Now you get really specific. You observe and remind, become super familiar with those automatic limiting thoughts that pop up. I'll never get that job. It's always their fault. Write those down too.
Know thine enemy, kind of.
Sort of. And then step six is redirecting. You become aware of the actions or behaviors that go with those thoughts. Sulking, complaining, procrastinating. When you catch yourself doing it in daily life, you consciously interrupt the pattern. Maybe say you change out loud.
Interrupt the program.
Yes. And you also mentally rehearse not acting out the old way in different situations. This weakens the automatic emotional reaction over time.
Undoing the wiring. Okay, final week. Week four.
Week four. Creating and rehearsing the new you. You've done the pruning. Now it's time to plant new seeds. Step seven. Creating and rehearsing.
The fun part.
Hopefully. You contemplate, what's a greater expression of myself I want to embody? Then you mentally rehearse being that person. How would they think? How would they feel? How would they act?
Visualize it.
And feel it. This is where you combine that clear intention, the thought of your new self, with an elevated emotion. Joy. Gratitude, love, create that coherent signal we talked about.
Convince your body the future is now.
You got it. And this is key. Don't get hung up on the how. Don't try to figure out how, when, where, or with whom this new reality will show up.
Leave the details to the universe.
Exactly. Trust the quantum field, the universal intelligence to handle the logistics. Expect the outcome to surprise you, to come in ways you couldn't have predicted. That's how you know you connected.
And just keep practicing this mental rehearsal.
Consistency is crucial. Repetition builds those new neural pathways, activates new genes. You're literally preparing your brain and body for that future reality before it happens physically.
Building the new you from the inside out. And you keep doing this daily.
Yes, daily sessions. Focus on one aspect for maybe 4 to 6 weeks. Then you can start working on other layers. The goal is to get so good at maintaining this new state of being that your external environment doesn't automatically pull you back into the old reality.
Becoming independent of the outside world for your inner state.
That's the essence of it. It's moving from being run by subconscious programs to consciously designing your own future self.
Wow. Okay. So let's bring this home. For everyone listening, what we've really learned is that you listening right now, you have this incredible power, this neurological machinery inside you to actually change, to go beyond your past, redefine who you are now, and actively create your future. It's about stepping outside your environment, your body, linear time, and using your thoughts and feelings together.
Aligning them to send that powerful, coherent signal out into the universe. It's just true change isn't about fixing things on the outside first. It's an inside job that then ripples outward.
Right. Okay, so here's a final thought to really cue on something provocative. Think about that space between the old you and the new you, that kind of void, that uncertainty where the old stuff is gone, but the new hasn't fully shown up yet.
The unknown.
Yeah. The book suggests that space isn't scary. It's actually the most fertile ground for creation. So the question is, can you get comfortable in that empty space, that place beyond your senses, and just live there in that field of infinite possibilities, waiting for your greatest self to emerge?